Right, good afternoon, everyone. Can I welcome you to the planning meeting? Can I first of all take apologies for absence, please?
I haven't received any formal apologies.
Councillor Parry and Councillor Johnson.
Thank you. That then takes us on to declarations of interest. The normal government warning, you can declare an interest just now, or you can wait until the particular item.
Chair, I'll again declare a non-financial interest in 5.6. As I understand, NHS Lothian still may have a financial interest, and I'm a non-executive director of NHS board.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else got any interest they want to declare at the moment? Councillor Alexander?
The Roslyn Lee Hospital, it affects where I stay, and I just feel I might be a bit prejudiced all about it. So, yeah.
Okay, right, thank you. Anyone else? Councillor Smale?
The Conservative Group, of course, know Robin Traquair, who has been and his family have been the owners of the Wellington Farm, which may come up for discussion. I understand that his economic interest is not sufficient that this would debar us from taking part in any discussion.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, right over. We finished with interests. Anybody else know anybody next door to them that they might want to declare interest for? Nope. Right, okay. Minutes of the meeting held on the 22nd of January for your approval. Are these approved? Right, thank you very much. That then takes us on to item 5.1 on pages 23 to 30, which is the Planning Performance Framework Annual Report. Peter.
Thank you, Chair. This report is to update the committee on the progress of work undertaken on the Planning Performance Framework for Midlothian, hereafter referred to as the PPF. Specifically, it provides feedback from the Scottish Government on the Council's submitted PPF for 2017-18. The Council's PPF for 2017-18 was submitted to the Scottish Government in July 2018. It provides a comprehensive review of the planning service during the year and highlights positive outcomes in a number of areas, most notably the development taking place on the ground and the adoption of the Midlothian Local Development Plan. Formal written feedback was received on the 10th of January 2019 and a copy is attached to the report. In the feedback report on the 15 performance matters, 12 were rated as green, giving no cause for concern, and 3 were rated as amber, which were areas where improvement has been identified. There were no matters rated as red. The performance is the best score achieved by Midlothian since the PPF was introduced in 2012. The planning service determines over 80% of its applications within time, achieving the target set by the Scottish Government. In addition to those markers covered by the PPF, the planning service continues to provide an easy, accessible and free pre-application advice service and duty officer service to customers. It's also successfully implementing a number of conservation-based projects. The comparative performance table shown on page 30 shows Midlothian's performance since the introduction of the PPF. It is recommended that the committee notes the feedback from the Scottish Government on the Council's submitted PPF 2017-18.
Okay, thank you very much indeed, Peter. A fine report card. Is there any members got any questions, comments? Councillor Winchester.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to, I know you said there was no overall red, but if you look at number one, decision-making performance marker, here we've got our time scale of 91 and a half weeks, but the Scottish average being 33. Can you tell me why there's such a big variance?
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, the reference there relates solely to the major applications. So that's the applications which are 50 dwellings or more or equivalent. So we're just talking about the large scale ones. So in terms of the statistics, you tend to find that there's, as soon as you have a delay by one or two applications for a variety of regions, it obviously skews and alters the overall average. But the reasons set out for the delays are referenced in paragraph 3.5 of the report, which, and I've summarised what the main reasons are, but they're to do with the time it takes to conclude legal agreements, especially if there's a disagreement with applicants. It relates to amending the schemes, which is quite commonplace, especially with housing layouts, often waiting for information or additional information from applicants. And it's just the way that the sort of volume of the major applications at the moment in the system with regard to Midlothian. Why that's different for Midlothian, say, compared to other authorities, is that it depends on where you are in Scotland. In terms of the East Coast, especially in the South East area, a lot of developments, virtually all major developments, require legal agreements. Maybe in the West Coast they don't because of population pressures, so there's not a requirement to deliver developer contributions towards education, for example, so you often don't have the requirement for a legal obligation. So that's one of the reasons. Other reasons are the way you actually record the time periods. Some authorities do what they call is stop the clock. So if you're waiting for additional information from applicants, they take that data out of the performance stats. So the Scottish Government are saying that we can all do that. So we're going to start doing that as well, just so it's more fairly compared to other authorities. But there's a variety of reasons, Chair.
So what you're basically saying is it the applicant's fault? Because that's the reasons down here.
Chair, I'm not saying the applicants, so it's a partnership between the council and applicants. Sometimes there's a delay in the applicants. Sometimes it's because both parties are wanting to improve schemes. The schemes are getting amended. That's no one's fault. That's just working together to deliver a better scheme. Or sometimes there's a genuine dispute over how much developer contribution is recovered on a scheme, and that needs working through with applicants. Some authorities are a lot more robust and will refuse schemes that are unacceptable. We tend to try and resolve them to make them acceptable. Other authorities would just refuse that, Chair. So I'm not looking to blame anyone, Chair.
Okay. I think you would find, Councillor Winchester, if you stripped out, for example, where you're in discussion about layout plans and you were in discussion about certain aspects within the plan, and you stripped that in timing terms, you would actually find that number of weeks would probably come down. I'm not saying that as an exact science, but, you know, hey-ho, people like measurements.
Sorry, but every area has to do that. Every council has to do that. So surely, if it's bad for us, it's bad for them.
Well, it depends how you time monitor things. If we time monitor, the clock starts from the application coming in, being registered, and then on the website. Then from then on in, if we don't actually stop and say, well, there's maybe 6 weeks where we're waiting on further information, then that clock has gone another 6 weeks. So it doesn't take long to get up to 30 weeks. Whether it should be 90 weeks or not, Peter's saying, well, you know what? There's pressure on the whole of the East Coast in terms of a large scale developments, and therefore it may take a lot longer. If you're in an area where there's depopulation, for example, you're not looking for lots of things that we look for as a local authority over in the East, so therefore there's a disparity right away. I mean, it's been accepted that by the Minister that we're on the right track. Peter.
Chair, just to come back on that as well, just we've started doing the stop the clock like other authorities now, so you'll start to see that average dropping. We've also started, you've probably noticed this from some of the committee reports now, we've put a six-month time period on the discussion of developer contributions just to focus the mind of all parties, so you'll start to see that sort of filtering into the statistics as well. So we are mindful of that statistic, and we are trying to address it with practical ways, Chair.
Okay, any other members got any questions? Okay, thanks very much for that. That then takes us on to Midlothian's local biodiversity plan. Again, Peter,
Thank you, Chair. This is a report seeking the committee's agreement to adopt the Midlothian Local Biodiversity Action Plan 2019 to 2024, hereafter referred to as the LBAP. It will replace the previous plan, which was adopted in 2006. The Council's biodiversity responsibilities are set out in legislation, and the publication of a new LBAP is a priority identified in the Single Midlothian Plan 2018-19. The LBAP will assist with implementing biodiversity enhancements in Midlothian help raise the profile of biodiversity in the natural environment and be a material consideration in the assessment of a planning application. The LBAP has been prepared in partnership with those bodies identified in paragraph 2.3 of the report, and its actions are to be implemented by a range of partners as set out in the action plan itself. The recommendation is as set out in paragraph 6.1 of the report, Chair.
Members, any questions, comments? Accept the report. Okay, thank you very much. Takes us on to... Oh, sorry, Councillor Alexander, I was... Catch you in time.
I just wondered what was happening with Japanese knotweed and whether that was still being dealt with on an ongoing basis.
Yeah, Chair, there's actually an action in the action plan there to tackle non-invasive species, including Japanese knotweed. So there is a strategy across multiple partners to address it where they can, because it is a growing problem, but it's more than just Midlothian Council, hence the partnership arrangement. So there's other landowners and other bodies looking to deal with it. So hopefully over the coming few years of the action plan, you'll see some action on it where we identify it. But it's just an ongoing battle, in effect.
Yes, you look puzzled.
Sorry. It's just that I think I see some along the old railway path, and I don't think it's been dealt with.
Chair, I know my colleagues in Landscape Resources, if you want to report it to them, Chair, that's the starting point, or just send me an email and I'll make sure it gets to the right person.
Okay. Thanks. Anybody else got any questions? Okay, thank you. Note that report. That then takes us on to 5.3, which is the major applications normally circulated. Any members that have any questions? Peter's here to answer them. Any questions? Just note the ongoing applications that are still in the mix. That then takes us on to the first of two pre-application consultations under 5.4, being the land east and west of East Houses Road, East Houses Dalkeith. Can I just say many members will have had many emails from many people about this particular application. Can I just say there isn't an application per se. This is a pre-application consultation. So therefore, we're not quite at that stage yet. I mean, these are piling up within the planning department, but we're not quite at that stage yet. So anyway, Peter, I'll just get you to introduce the subject matter.
Thank you, Chair. This is a report regarding a pre-application consultation regarding the redevelopment of the existing snow sports centre to include leisure facilities, tourist accommodation.
Can I just apologise to everybody? I've got it round the other way. I had East Houses first, but sorry, I'm... Aye, right, OK.
It's my mistake, Chair. Yes. I think the actual running order is different to the papers in the agenda. So I should do whichever one you wish me to do first.
I've mentioned it live and on camera. Well, let's deal with the East Houses one first.
Thank you, Chair. This is a report regarding a pre-application consultation for a proposed residential development and erection of school with associated engineering works, open space and landscaping at land east and west of East Houses Road, East Houses Dalkeith. The purpose of this report is to afford members the opportunity to make comment on the proposals at this very early stage of the planning application process or planning process in line with guidance reported to committee at its meeting in June 2017. The applicants have engaged in a public consultation exercise which includes holding a public drop-in session. The report outlines a provisional planning consideration with regard to the development plan and material considerations. The site is not allocated in the adopted 2017 Midlothian Local Development Plan, and as such, the principal residential development and the erection of a school on the site conflicts with the development plan policy. A material consideration in the assessment of any application, if one is submitted, will be the need for additional housing and the need for a school. With regard to the demand for housing, it is relevant to note that the Midlothian local plan has identified sufficient housing allocations to meet its housing requirement, and as such the council does not need to support the proposed housing. With regard to the need for a school, if the council, through its review of its learning estate strategy, determines that a new school is required within the Dalkeith East Houses catchment area, in particular on this site, then the need to meet this educational demand would be a material consideration that the committee could give significant weight to do so. However, it is worth noting that this consideration is based on the indicative information available at present. A detailed assessment of any proposal will be made if a planning application is forthcoming. The applicant could submit a planning application once the public consultation has been concluded. It is recommended that the committee notes the provisional planning position set out in the report, that any comments made by members will form part of the minute of the committee meeting, and that the expression of a provisional view does not fetter the committee in its consideration of any subsequent planning application.
Thank you very much. Anybody got any comments they want to make at this point, which of course is without prejudice to the final outcome if indeed an application comes forward? Councillor Mulligan.
Thanks, Councillor. And keeping in mind, when the application comes forward, if there's supporting information, I may have a change of mind, but I'm quite frankly alarmed that we have a site that's sitting outside the local development plan being brought forward like this. I can understand the fact that the Director of Education is looking urgently for an area for schooling, since the local development plan has been adopted, with the numbers being generated near Dublin since the last calculation. Some time back, the last local development plan were 0.24, and in this we're now up to 0.48. So therefore I can understand why a site for a primary school is site specific, and that part I can understand. Why a developer is coming forward with any land out with the local development plan for additional houses, and especially at this scale, is really concerning to me. Being as Midlothian's already having to take the biggest hit in Scotland for housing, when we're looking for our infrastructure creaking, and the reason we're running for a school is simply because of that growth in the area. So I would take some real convincing, and keep in mind there was a major public consultation on this. To bring this forward just now, I think it's maybe opportunism, and I would genuinely need some real convincing with the final papers for you ever even consider supporting this.
Thanks very much for that. Did you indicate, Councillor Smale?
Yeah, the situation is, of course, much more complicated because as a council we looked at the school estate strategy in the summer of last year, and all of us, particularly the councillors involved in East, were sworn to secrecy because there was commercial and confidence issue to do with negotiating possibly part of the triangular site to the west as a site for the school. At that time, we were reassured that the owner of the land had frequently been told that there was no possibility whatsoever of housing on that triangular section because it would lead to coalescence. The council, therefore, has got itself into a very difficult position of claiming that the primary school and the sharp end of the slice of Bree it does not constitute coalescence, but somehow the housing would constitute coalescence. And I think that's possibly meant that we've opened this Pandora's box of revisiting the whole question of Kipilaw, a word that does not appear in the paper, but I think that's the word that most people use to refer to this site. I myself am not convinced that we've exhausted all the possible sites for a school servicing East Houses and to a lesser extent Woodburn. I've suggested in the past that since we have a problem with the existing East Houses park, a very large park that is very run down, actually it might be a brilliant idea to have a primary school there with a mile-long running track around it and changing facilities and a proper pavilion instead of the rundown assets we currently have. I have some interest in officers in the council, but it's not gone very far. If it is the general will of the communities of East Houses and Mayfield that all of this land should be left just as it is, then I would be inclined to start looking at other more radical alternatives for the siting of the school that we will undoubtedly need. If, on the other hand, there's a middle ground, it's clearly less sensitive to develop the western side slice of Bree than the eastern side, much larger estate, which completely compromises the Kipilaw Steading development, a very attractive and important historic feature of the landscape of Midlothian, and a patch of ground that creates the great separation between Dalkeith and East Houses stroke Mayfield. So while I'm not entirely ruling out some compromise in this, I think we need to look as a council radically again at our strategy for a school on this site, and to treat the developer fairly, and but also to think about the community's interest in maintaining separation between the communities.
Thanks very much indeed. Councillor Cassidy.
Thank you, Chair. I'd just like to echo those comments. I think that we're setting a very dangerous precedent and joining up the communities which we've had this before us before. This is the last bit of farmland in that particular strip of ground, and I think we're losing valuable farm ground by the day, and we can't afford to keep doing this. But I take Derek's point, you know, it's coming in at this point with going against the local plan, it's getting dangerous.
Okay, thanks very much. Anybody else? Nope. Can I then just say that these comments will be taken into account if and when an application comes in? Okay, that takes us on to my 5.5, which is the pre-application consultation for the Hill End development. Peter.
Thank you, Chair. This is a report regarding a pre-application consultation regarding the redevelopment of the existing snow sports centre to include leisure facilities, tourist accommodation, hotel, function suite and ancillary retail and restaurant at Midlothian Snow Sports Centre. The purpose of this report is to afford members the opportunity to make comment on the proposal at this very early stage of the planning process, in line with the guidance reported to committee at its meeting in June 2017. The applicants have engaged in a public consultation exercise, which included holding a public drop-in session. The report outlines a provisional planning consideration with regard to development plan and material considerations. The site is an identified sports, leisure and tourist destination within a sensitive landscape. Development plans policies support the general principle of redevelopment in the site and enhancing the on-site offer, subject to the different components of the proposal being ancillary to the snow sports centre and subject to any development being undertaken in an environmentally sensitive way, which respects the site's location within the Pentland Hills. However, it is worth noting this consideration is based on the indicative information available at present. A detailed assessment of any proposal will be made if a plan application is forthcoming. The applicant can submit a plan application once the public consultation has been concluded. It is recommended that the committee notes the provisional planning position set out in the report, that any comments made by members will form part of the minutes of the committee meeting, and that any expression of a provisional view does not fetter the committee in its consideration of any subsequent planning application.
Okay, thank you very much, Peter. Again, opening it up to any members. Got any comments to make? Councillor Hardy.
It was in 3.14, the last line, which says there may be a requirement for developer contributions to be made towards the A701 relief road. I also think it would be worth noting that, you know, given the scale of the development, it would probably also be appropriate for developer contributions to be considered for the communities that will be directly impacted, specifically Damhead, Old Pentland and Lothian Burn, and also given the loss of some of the natural countryside in that area to this development, it would also be appropriate, I think, to consider developer contributions to enhancing the Pentlands Regional Park at Flodiston. So I just thought I should get those points across.
Much. Anybody else got any comments to make? Councillor Winchester.
Thanks, Chair. I'm just inquiring whether you've thought about the entrance and exit, considering that you're just along from a really bad three-point turn there for the cars, that will add extra traffic there, and the A702 is a fast road anyway. So can you tell me what's been done about that, please?
Yeah, Chair, I mean, at the moment, the proposal's at a very, very early stage. I know my transport colleagues have already identified that there are issues in relation to the access, in particular to this site. The current arrangement is not ideal, but, of course, if you want to redevelop it, add a lot more traffic to it, then there needs to be a full-blown traffic assessment to work out what the best solution to that is. There is a neighbouring site, Coldcotts, which we've had informal discussions with before about looking to share and access, improve access arrangements. So those discussions are ongoing. But to be honest, Chair, not until the traffic assessment has been done in detail that we'll start to flesh out what those solutions are. We're just at that very early stage, but you're right to raise the issue regarding access. That is definitely one of the big issues, Chair.
Okay, thanks. And Transport Scotland will be involved in that as well because it's a trunk road. Is there anybody else has any comments to make? Right, take these comments on board, Peter, when assessing if the application comes to fruition. Thank you very much. That then takes us on to item 5.6, which is for the third and last time, the application for the redevelopment of Rosslyn Hospital with new development there also. Peter. Oh, sorry.
Thank you, Chair. This report is regarding two plan applications and a listed building consent application for a predominantly residential development at the former Roslyn Lee Hospital, Roslyn. The applications have been continued from the committee's meetings of November 2018 and January 2019. At its meeting in January 2019, the committee expressed a desire to see the restoration of the former Roslyn Lee Hospital listed building, but balanced this position with concern at the level of developer contribution proposed by the applicant, in particular with regard to meeting the educational requirements arising from the development. In response to the committee's concern, the applicant is now proposing to increase their developer contribution offer to fully cover the cost of meeting the educational requirements arising from the proposed development. To meet the educational requirements, the applicant is not proposing to make a contribution towards community facilities, borders rail, rural public transport, or to provide any affordable housing. At its meeting in January 2019, the committee also expressed concern regarding the access to the site and the local road network. A number of works have been identified that could help with this regard. However, they are not of a scale that mitigates the concern, and an objection on highway safety remains. It is recommended that the committee notes the updates set out in the report and that the committee refuse the planning applications and listed building consent for the reasons set out in the application report presented to committee at its meeting originally in November 2018.
Okay, thanks very much. Open up. Well, Councillor Hackett.
Thank you, Chair. I'll maybe contribute later, but it was just to say that when this item was discussed at the last planning meeting, I moved that the application was rejected. However, since been open to listening to the new information and happy to hear the debate before coming to a final conclusion.
Okay, thank you very much. That will be noted. Okay, open up for members to discuss. Councillor Muirhead.
Just a couple of questions in the first instance. There's an indication that the applicant intended to meet the developer contributions towards education and full school transport in full over a defined period of time. Can I ask if there has that required a substantial increase in the overall value of the developer contributions? Because that isn't specifically indicated here. You mentioned that they had agreed to increase it. Is that a significant increase?
Yes, Chair, there has been a significant increase, defining what significant is, but yeah, we're talking significant sums of money rather than just loose change. Chair, they've moved positively towards making an increased contribution. Part of that increase is balanced with stepping back on the affordable housing provision, which has got a particular cost to it, although you're delivering affordable housing, which may not be a financial measure in terms of giving money to the council, but in terms of allocating land for affordable housing provider to deliver on site, in terms of private development, that's got a cost implication to it, so that's come into play as well.
Thank you, Chair. Just on that then, if you're looking at, as it were, the financial envelope that might have come to the Council either through social housing, and again, not to say that the Council would have managed that, but looking at our policy commitments being met there, and then the financial contributions with respect to developer contributions, has the overall sum, as it were, grown, or is it just a rejigging of what was already on the table?
It has grown as well, Chair. It's both. It's both. It's rejigging and there's extra money as well, so it's both.
Councillor Hardy.
I would welcome the fact that the developer has clearly listened to the discussions that we had over this at the last committee and has obviously moved to reflect the consensus that I think the committee had kind of come to, that we specifically wish the educational requirements to be met, and we were willing to waive the requirements for Borders Rail and affordable housing specifically. So I think it's worth recognising that the applicants have clearly moved in a direction reflecting the discussions had at the previous meeting, which I don't think are fully reflected in the recommendations.
Councillor Corn.
Thanks, Chair. Councillor Hardy referenced that we were willing to waive some contributions. Not sure I ever made that contribution to say I'd be happy to willing to waive that, and I don't recall anybody else saying that.
Councillor Smale.
Yes, my recollection is that the group to my right held fast on the question of full educational provision. It appears to me that we now have that. What I think the discussions have helped achieve as a distillation of what exactly we are having to trade off here. If you accept that this is so remote from Borders Rail and we're going to get money for Borders Rail from other developments anyhow, it really distills down to the affordable housing being dropped. And I realise that's a very precious and important point to many councillors and to the media who follow our affairs. However, if you think about it, if we don't agree to this, then the number of things can happen. Either we go to the reporter, in which case our position is perhaps rather difficult because some of this land is zoned, or alternatively the project is abandoned because it is not viable. And that, if that happens, then we won't have any affordable housing either. We'll end up with nothing, and the largest listed building in Midlothian by one of Scotland's most famous architects will be at risk of going to rack and ruin because the project cannot proceed. So on that basis, respecting that the other councillors have always held their position on the schooling matter, I think we have to consider that the loss of the social housing, which would be under 1% of our entire stock, is not a strong enough reason to hold up this application. It has always been a trade-off between the exceptionally high costs of restoring this historic building and achieving what we would normally hope to extract from a development for the betterment of other parts of Midlothian.
Mr. Hackett.
Thank you, Chair. Just one comment in there. Just to clarify and make absolutely abundantly clear that no Labour member of this committee, well, we're not here as Labour members and we're not here as a group, so I'll make that clear. The other bit, and I think I said this at the last committee, I would love to see this building restored. I think it would be fantastic. And equally, I'm sure there are lots of residents in Midlothian and beyond that would like to see the same. However, there's the question of who pays. And what I still see before me is a setup that is asking council taxpayers to foot the bill for parts of this project. And that element of it I still find quite intolerable, to be frank. And I know other councillors I've been at meetings with other councillors where we're grilled, questioned, pressed on developer contributions, what they're paying for, and there's most definitely, I would say, a view out there in the public that all the new development that's coming to our county isn't being backed up either by developer contributions or by the other sets of infrastructure that either the council or other governments would be required to make. So when I'm looking at this, there doesn't seem to be, well, there's no contribution to our social housing commitment, but equally I'm reading that there isn't a financial contribution to the council to buy land elsewhere, which I believe is common practice where other developments don't have social housing. Nothing towards community facilities, nothing towards rural public transport, and nothing towards borders rail. And I think a combination of those things, particularly in light of the financial situation the council in, I think it's just wrong for this committee and the developer to ask council taxpayers to foot the bill on this occasion.
Right, thanks for your contribution. Just before I bring you in again, Councillor Smeal, just, Peter, there was a comment made by Councillor Hardy and then a comment made by Councillor Curran regarding where we actually got to at the last meeting regarding what could be dropped out and what would stay. It wasn't, from my recollection, it wasn't just about education, it was actually just to try and find a solution. Could you recall?
Yeah, Chair, I think I had an instruction to go away to see if the developers would increase their offer to meet the education contribution. I also think the committee concluded that it was still anxious about access and highway issues, so it was sent away to look at that. Chair, but my understanding of that situation was that the committee instructed me to go away to do that, but I wasn't prejudging what the committee would then determine. It was just those were the big issues coming out of that debate, so we went away to do that, and that's what I've done. In terms of picking up on the issue about the developer contribution and the affordable housing and that, I think my discussion with the developers after the last committee was they've reached a point where I think they were saying, well, this is the extent of what we can offer. That's the full gambit. So that's why they've had to take the value from the affordable housing component out and put it towards the education, because their argument to me is that is the full extent of what we can now offer you. That's as far as it goes in terms of their offer, Chair. I just say that because just in case there's a feeling that they could give more, I'm not sure that they would sign up to that. I think they're saying this is it, you either take it or leave it. This is where we've got to as far as we can go with the financial offer of the scheme, Chair.
Right, thanks for that clarification. Councillor Smeal, you indicated you want to come back in.
A little concerned about the semantics of this expression, they're asking the council to foot the bill. Not making a contribution is not the same as asking someone else to foot the bill. There is no bill. They are providing all that is relative in the matter of education, which was the hot button at the last council meeting. And as I've said before, there is no relevance to the Borders Rail to this site, then the monies for that can be easily found from other developments. So the council will not be worse off by agreeing to this. In fact, we as Midlothian will have a highly attractive development that will be a credit to the planning process if we're able to save this historic building. It cannot be imagined that you simply can take such a large and dilapidated 19th century building and somehow a normal construction project can absorb all the cost. Something has to give. And I think from what I hear from Peter Armstrong, the developers have done everything they possibly can within the envelope of keeping a viable development to follow the desires of the council as were discussed at the last meeting.
What's an opinion? Councillor Hardy?
Given we've seen developer contributions from developments at Pennycook go towards historic restoration in Pennycook Town Centre, we see funds from developments in Gorebridge and in Dalkeith are similarly used for historic regeneration. I would fail to see how restoration of Midlothian's largest historic building should not equally be regarded as a cultural benefit to Midlothian and thus classed as within the context of a developer contribution if they will be restoring a historic building.
Well, that is a point of view. I mean, nobody's, for example, mentioned that we're going to lose 90-odd units that would have gone to social housing. Now, I know what you said, Councillor Smeal, if it doesn't go ahead, well, you don't have them. That's right, but you also don't have the other 300-odd houses that are going onto a road that's not fit for purpose. So, you know, you've got to balance it all together. It's such a remote area. And just, can I just bear in mind, it's a Category C listed building. It's not an A-listed building we're talking about in any shape or form, or even dare I say B, it's of the lowest category. Now, I know what you're saying, wouldn't it be nice, to have. Of course it would be, but you know, it comes at a heck of a cost. No community benefits whatsoever. No rural transport whatsoever, and we're arguing about a green transport policy to get people out of cars and onto other forms of transport. And also, the road network is not suitable for people walking either, never mind anything else. There's no lighting along that route whatsoever, and goodness only knows what it's going to be like going round through there, down that back road to hit Roslyn Glen, which again is a road that's increasing at this moment in time. We seem to be setting that aside. Now, the actual solution for that would be actually to put a new road in, but again, that comes at a cost, and the developer says they don't have the money. So I'm just saying, you've got to take that all into consideration. I know it would be lovely to get it back. All I'm saying is you've got to remember that we do have other policies within the Midlothian local plan that we're going to set aside, and I just wonder, in balancing terms, whether that's the right thing to do, that's all. If the developer was prepared to pay the money, then I think this committee wouldn't have taken the third planning committee before we come to a decision. But, you know, it's just a feeling I have and an unease I have about putting something through and just disregarding lots of policy issues or items within our policy, whereas Councillor Hardy was looking for everything to come from Hill End, but nothing to come from here. And it's just an interesting scenario. Councillor Hackett and then Councillor Smale.
Thank you, Chair. I think some of the issues there that Councillor Hardy brings up, the conservation area regeneration scheme, my understanding, these are council policies, so they've been debated here, they've been agreed with the community, and then actioned. Our strategic housing plan, that's agreed here, it's consulted with the community, and off we go. So when we have a planning application that doesn't fit with our policies, someone is footing the bill, either financially or by us not meeting our plans that we have gone out and consulted the community and made a commitment to deliver. So factoring all of those things in, I mean, I'm still open to hear other debate, but I would appreciate, Chair, with support of the other councillors, if we had a roll call vote on this issue as well.
Okay, I hear that one, and I'll come back to you. Councillor Hackett. Councillor Smale, then Councillor Muirhead.
I'm aware of the gradings of listing in Scotland, but it remains the case that this is the largest listed building in Midlothian and by a very important architect. The idea that it brings nothing, these houses will be quite highly rated for council tax, so there is an economic benefit to the council in doing this. In these specific circumstances, the developer here was encouraged at the beginning and for a very long time to work up this scheme on the basis it was an enabling development. The issue of the road access must have been apparent right from the beginning, and so I think they would be rightly concerned as to why the planning department here had encouraged this. The suggestion at 3.2 that the developer be responsible for the proposed works, I can quite readily accept, would take some risk off the table for the council. But it doesn't seem to me to be evident that the problem of this road will be any worse than several others in rural Midlothian. And at the end of the day, we have the prize that we will have, as a council, have saved one of the most important, by scale and also by architect, one of the most important historic buildings in Midlothian for the future. Otherwise, its prospects look very poor indeed, and in which case you will have no council houses, you will have no rating base that you would otherwise achieve, and we will have lost the chance to have a very fine development for this county.
Don't want to get in, I'll bring in just now, Councillor. I don't want to get involved in a debate about, you know, what the council tax take will be. The council services will also have to be provided, so let's not be too disingenuous about that. Council tax is about 20-odd percent of our total tax take, so in terms of that, it ain't going to make a jot of difference, because a lot of services that we'll have to provide as a council will have to be provided over and above any council tax take that we take. So, you know, let's stick to the planning facts. Councillor Muirhead.
Thanks, Chair. I didn't see your role here as actually sitting down negotiating over the airways or with the developers that might be sitting here today. And I made points that at the last meeting, particularly around education, because I saw that as absolutely responsible of us if we were going to agree to this particular application going through without the required contribution towards education facilities. That doesn't mean that I wasn't concerned about other things that were that were being proposed. And it's been suggested here that the council wouldn't be footing the bill for anything else. If there's anything that needs to be done as a consequence of this development that the developer's no paying for, then it's the council that will foot the bill. If we determine if this was to go ahead and the additional housing goes up there and there are problems in terms of people negotiating difficult junctions when they're coming out, then it's the council that will have to pay for that. We'll pick up the bill for that in the longer term, if that's the case, if we do not get contributions to that. And road safety issues is a concern to me. I'm also a bit concerned, although maybe slightly less so, in terms of the rural transport. There's no bus service that goes anywhere near that location, so that's a consideration, and it's something that the developer has indicated that they're not prepared to make a contribution towards. And just lastly, the point I think probably along the lines of what Russell tried to make there as well. We talk about these being bigger houses and there'll be a substantial council tax coming in. There'll be more kids at in these houses. We're currently been arguing and have got the developer to agree to the maximum in terms of the capital contributions towards building schools, but the schools have still got to be run. And when you've got big families with a lot of kids, then that's a fair chunk, given that 50% of the council's entire expenditure almost is in relation to education. So, as I say, I was particularly vocal at the last meeting about the education contribution, and I'm pleased that that has been resolved, but I think there's still other issues that are still problematic to me.
Councillor Cassidy.
Thank you, Chair. On to Jim, Councillor Muirhead's points there. Every single thing he's outlined there is pertinent to every single building site and every single house in the estate that we build in Midlothian. So to say that there could be problems come from unexpected problems, that's the same with every single development we have in Midlothian. And I have to agree with Councillor Smale, the benefits from this outweigh the negatives. I think that we're going to restore an incredible building. We're going to put beautiful houses up there. And it is in the local plan to build up there. So I cannot see the negatives in this. Am I wrong?
Sorry, if I could just come in. I'm not talking about unexpected problems. Our transport officers are telling us there are issues. There are safety concerns at the moment. And they're the things I'm referring to that need to be addressed. And all I'm saying is, if we don't get a contribution for the developer to address these, they will have to be addressed in the longer term, and it's the council that will stand the bill for that.
Okay, I think we've had a shot to go round the houses. Can we now formalise on the planning application? Councillor Smale, it looks like you were...
I would like to move that we accept the application and overrule the officers on this occasion. I respect the fact they've followed the rules.
Seconder for that, Councillor Hardy. Is there anybody else got an amendment, Councillor Hackett?
Chair, I asked about a roll call vote, so I don't know when that's appropriate. Yep. I move that we reject the application.
Is there a go to Muirhead.
Can I just mention a bit of the roll call vote?
Right.
Sorry, just to clarify about the roll call vote. Yeah, in terms of the standing order 11.52, there requires to be a third of the meeting an agreement to call in a roll call vote, which isn't because there are 14 members here, which equates to five. So I presume, can I just make sure that we have got five people that are actually agreeable to a roll call vote? Okay, so that takes care of that. If I can then just go on and say that if, when I actually read out the councillor's name, if you could clearly identify whether you're in favour of Councillor Smale's motion or Councillor Hackett's amendment.
So we'll just, well, to make it nice and easy, it's motion or amendment. Sorry, Councillor Winchester, for your information, motion is Councillor Smale, amendment is Councillor Hackett.
Excuse me, Chair, can you stop being so patronising?
You were shaking your head as if I had got it wrong.
Councillor Baird.
For the motion.
Councillor Cassidy. Councillor Curran.
For the amendment.
Councillor Hackett.
For the amendment.
Councillor Hardy.
For the motion.
Councillor Imrie.
For the motion.
Councillor Lee Douglas.
For the motion.
Councillor McCall.
For the motion.
Councillor Muirhead.
Amendment.
Councillor Munro.
For the motion.
Councillor Russell.
For the amendment.
Councillor Smale.
For the motion.
Councillor Wallace.
For the motion.
And Councillor Winchester.
For the motion.
So the total is for the motion 10 and for the amendment 4.
Okay, the motion is now carried.
Chair,
yes.
If I can just,
sorry.
Just obviously, in terms of the report itself, has not identified any planning conditions that you would normally expect with a residential scheme and the conversion of a listed building. If it's acceptable to the committee, we'll go away and draft some conditions, but have them. We'll discuss them with the applicants, and then we'll come back and have them agreed by the chair. If that's okay. And we'll obviously pursue a developer contribution as proposed in terms of meeting the educational requirements.
Okay.
Sorry, Chair, now that the application's been agreed by the committee, what safeguards are there for the developer to go on site and, let's say, not demolish the C-listed building or just leave it? So if you like, take the discount but not actually carry through with the development.
There's a number of things here, Chair. In terms of, just start with the listed building, that still has the protection of being a listed building, so what's been granted is the conversion of that building. So if there's the demolition works which are out with the scope of that permission, then that's a breach of planning control of which we can take action. If you actually carry out unauthorised works to a listed building, it's a straightaway offence, so there is that safeguard. The second thing, Chair, is picking up in the planning conditions, making sure that there's a balance between the delivery of new housing and the conversion, i.e. so you don't get all the new housing and not the conversion that's left. So you'd be looking to phase that together and mindful that the economics of this are based on you need the new build to part fund the conversion. So ideally you want the two to run together. So we would look to set a phasing condition to set that out, Chair.
Yes, Councillor Cassidy.
Could I just ask, Chair, if we could fast-track this, because my concerns are for the state of that building. No?
Well, just, it'll be done as quickly as any other planning application.
Well, it's just that we've had applications like this where the conditions seem to drag on and on, stuff that we've passed quite a while ago and it's still in the condition stage.
Yeah.
Chair, just come in. The conditions bit won't be the delay. The delay will be just getting the solicitor to agree the legal agreement to secure that the council gets that education money. That would be the time factor will be that process.
It's lawyers, Councillor Cassidy. Anyway, that then takes us on to item 5.7, which is the application for the erection of 28 dwelling houses and 44 flatted dwellings at Mayfield Dalkeith. Peter. Oh, sorry. Right, Peter.
Thank you, Chair. This report is regarding a planning application for the erection of 72 dwellings on land east of Conifer Road, Mayfield, which is the site of the former Bryans Primary School. The site is allocated for housing as site HS48. It's in the Midlothian Local Development Plan and is located within the built-up area of Mayfield, where there is a presumption in favour of appropriate residential development. The indicative number of residential units allocated for the site is 65. The application is for 72 residential units and is part of the Council's housing programme and comprises all affordable housing units. The proposed development comprises the erection of 28 two-storey semi-detached dwelling houses, the erection of 44 flatted dwellings in 11 two-storey four-and-a-block buildings, open space, play area and landscaping. There are two access roads, one off Conifer Road and a second off David Scott Avenue, car parking provision, and there's also suds provision. The stated development components meet the requirements set out in the local development plan and are configured so that the layout will provide a good form of development, which will provide an attractive place to live with good amenity. The report sets out that there are no representations received. There have been five consultation responses, the details of which are set out in section 5 of the report. The planning authority is still awaiting a final comment from SEPA, but are not expecting any issues to be raised that cannot be mitigated. The recommendation is to grant planning permission subject to conditions, securing developer contributions, and making sure that any issues raised by SEPA are addressed.
Thank you very much indeed. Questions, comments? Councillor Smill.
As local councillor, I'd just like to congratulate the staff for the minor redesign of this, such that there are now two access points. I believe due to negotiation with the Housing Association, that has removed the principal objection that many of the residents had to the configuration of this development, and I'm sure that will be an improvement to the amenity of the area.
Bear.
Thank you, Chair. The first one I wanted to cover, and I'll apologise that I've lost track of the progress on this, but a lot of residents were noted, and it was in the press about this site, that there was asbestos found in the ground there. I just wondered what the current state of play was with that.
Yeah, Chair, as part of the development process, and there's conditions to pick that up in terms of the ground conditions, there are a process in place to mitigate any potential problems, so you would see that as part of the development process. There's conditions on the permission which make sure that the developer submits all the actions they're going to do, and then we would sign that off, and then they would validate that those works have been done, so we will pick up that issue, Chair.
Is that okay? Oh, sorry.
Yeah, just a follow-up on that as well. When, and again, we might have to take this out with planning committee, but when was that school demolished? I mean, was it pre or post, like knowing that the dangers of asbestos? Obviously, because I'm a bit younger than everybody else here, I don't know.
I don't think there's been a school there for at least 10 years, Chair, if I remember. The concern about asbestos is a continuing sort of issue that everyone's learning about. It's because we don't realise how much materials asbestos is incorporated in. I think the latest one is that it's in our Artex ceilings as well. So even in your own residential home, if you've got Artex in your ceiling, you've got asbestos, but it can be dealt with safely. So I'm not sure the actual timing, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, we'll probably look to follow that up and see if we can get a better understanding of that, but obviously that's not within the realms of this. The other issue I have with this it's not with the application itself, but it's the condition of the existing roads that go round this proposed development. My concern is that unless we repair one of the roads now, specifically Rowntree Road, which is in a horrendous state, if we allow building trucks to go down that road, it'll be cratered. So I think one thing I'd like to see is probably Rowntree Road repaired before development starts, and then have all the trucks routed the other direction. Although that might be an issue because then you're getting close to Lawfield Primary. I just worry about the impact for local residents that basically I already have to deal with really poor condition roads that are only going to get worse over the next year or two while this development's built.
Yeah, I'll relay that on to my transport colleagues in terms of the state of the roads.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to encourage the Community Council to write in with their exact comments, but it was to offer similar feedback to Councillor Smail at the last Community Council meeting. Community Councils were full of high praise indeed for the Planning Department and the Council as a whole in terms of how they have interacted with staff, Council staff on this development. Certainly a great sense of being felt to be listened to, and can see that their contributions were making a difference to the layout of the scheme and other things. And I think picking up on Councillor Baird's comment, it would be good to see a program of work engaging with neighbours around some of these traffic issues. The roads are really tight, and some of them are in a real state, and I agree. I think there could be... you don't want to lose that goodwill early on in a development, and hopefully it will be good to see coming forward that engage the local community well.
Councillor Hardy.
Just to pick up on the issue of the roads, as mentioned by Councillors Hackett and Baird, I mean, the developer contributions, we're talking about Borders Rail, education and improvements to Mayfield Town Centre. I think it might be appropriate to consider some of the developer contributions should be allocated towards the areas more directly impacted by the development, and perhaps some improvements to roads and perhaps community facilities in the more immediate area, perhaps even some improvements to paths as well.
Chair, just going to be slightly careful with developer contributions in terms of you've got to, the contribution has to be as a direct, you know, to meet a direct consequence of the development rather than just a general pot. So if you've got a particular project in mind which you think's a consequence of the development, then we can talk about that in terms of direct contributions, but we're on just a general discussion point. The other thing is just worth mentioning, Chair, if I can, is that it's just picking up out with the planning system, the council as a sort of roads authority can also pick up issues about road maintenance. If developers are seen to damage roads, then the council has other powers to try and get those developers to repair whatever damage they've caused. So we have that as well.
Okay, I'll be quite happy with this application. Okay, right, thanks very much indeed. That then takes us on to 5.8, which is land north of Kirkcole Road, again for 16 flatty dwellings. Peter.
Thank you, Chair. This report is with regard to planning application for the erection of 21 dwellings on land to the north of Kirk Hill Road, Pennycook. The site is allocated for housing as site HS22 in the Midlothian Local Development Plan and is located within the built-up area of Pennycook, where there's a presumption in favour of appropriate residential development. The indicative number of residential units allocated for the site is 20. The application is for 21 residential units and is part of the Council's housing programme and comprises all affordable housing units. The proposed development comprises the erection of 4 two-storey semi-detached houses, the erection of 1 single-storey detached dwelling house, the erection of 16 flatted dwellings in 4 two-storey four-and-a-block buildings, landscaping, an access road off Esk Hill, car parking provision and suds provision. The stated development meets the requirements set out in the Midlothian Local Development Plan and is configured in a way that the layout provides good amenity for future occupants. The report sets out that there have been 25 objections from 16 households. There have also been 5 consultation responses. The details of the representations and consultations are set out in sections 5 and 6 of the report. The recommendation is to grant planning permission subject to conditions and securing developer contributions.
Okay, thanks very much, Peter. I'll bring Councillor Hardy in first and then Councillor Nicholl, as the two councillors have both separately and collectively called it in.
Thank you, Chair. It's essentially one of the reasons was the sheer strength of feeling in the local community as to the development. And I would also have some concerns relating to the scale of the development given the prevalence of historic housing in that area. And I would question the appropriateness of development of this type in that area. So those would certainly be my most immediate concerns.
Councillor McCall.
Thank you, Chair. I called in this application. I was contacted by the bowling club and had quite a chat about it. I'm not against the development, and neither are the bowling club. If you'll see on your map on page 154 where the bowling green sits in relation to the area and also the tennis courts. The bowling club purchased this land. They knew development was going to happen because it was in the plan. However, they were promised an access road would be built because they have right of access. Access is a tricky situation for the bowling club. To use to access the bowling green for their heavy equipment, for grass maintenance and so on, they're having to go via the playing field. And that obviously won't be an option once the building starts. If you can see the plan behind you there, the height of the buildings is it's quite a drop from where the buildings are down onto the bowling green. If you look at the plan again, between 58 and 60 Kirkhill Road, there's a little lane, and the lane goes up to the tennis courts. That's the only way at the moment that anyone with a disability can access the bowling green, is to be driven up there and then dropped off, and then they have to negotiate their way into the bowling green there. The bowling club were really quite excited about having an access road built for them when this development was going to come along, so that people who were disabled could get access and there would be easier access for them. For their heavy equipment. My understanding is the architect wasn't advised about the access rights for the bowling club, and that's why one wasn't included. I very much doubt that you would get any heavy equipment down the lane and then into the bowling green from that way. Who owns the access road is a bit, or rather the lane is a bit, well, it's a bit dubious at the moment. Some of the owners on Kirkhill Road think that they own it. Some of it apparently is Crown Estate. It's not particularly clear from that. I find it a bit disappointing that the Bowling Green, that they haven't been their promises haven't been taken into account, and that we've got a fantastic facility here. Quite a few members of this bowling club, lots of older members. The bowling club's assisting in decreasing social isolation, which is something that we all want to have. Some of the members don't actually play bowls. They go along, they have a cup of tea, they watch other people play their bowls. If we don't sort out some sort of access for them to have the heavy equipment to get down onto the bowling green, I don't know if they can sustain as a club, if that's going to be an option for them. It's a fabulous wee asset that we've got there, and I just think for the sake of getting an access road in there, I think it would be a real shame to lose that. Like I say, I don't have an issue with the actual development, and neither do the club, but based on the plans, and if you can see, I mean, it's almost like a 45 degree angle that we're looking at, the way that the plans have been brought up. So that's my main objection, and that's why I called it in. Thank you, Chair.
Right, thanks very much, Councillor McCall. Peter, do you want to maybe pick up on that? Because that's clearly an important asset.
Yeah, Chair, if I can just pick up, I'll try and answer Councillor Hardy's point first, which is just to say, in terms of the housing, yes, it's allocated for housing. The density is equivalent of about 27 dwellings a hectare, which is seen as about an average density, so that's comparable to the neighbouring estate at Eskhill, so it's comparable to that. The heights of buildings are two-storey, Most of the properties in that area are either two-storey, single-storey, or what we call one and a half, so there's sort of dormers in the roof space, so the heights are comparable. So we feel that the overall form of the housing scheme is compatible to its location. In terms of going back to the access issue in the bowling club, Chair, there's a number of things here. I suppose the opening point is that the access arrangements between different landowners is, first of all, not a planning consideration. However, just to clarify a few things, that is our understanding is that the alleged access rights over this piece of land are disputed by the council, and it's my understanding in consultation with legal advisers that that is not necessarily the case. So although it's not a planning consideration, we have looked into it and we're not convinced that there is a binding responsibility on the council as landowner to secure access across that piece of land. The piece of land next to it, which is outside the boundary of the site, to the right or to the east, when you look at the plan on page 154, there is, as was mentioned there, a private access way, which is not adopted highway. It's not part of the council's adopted highway. It's wide enough for cars to pass, and I've seen cars parked down there myself and other cars pass them. So there is a degree of width there, which goes to the back of the bowling club. And I think the bowling club use it, but are just maybe nervous that someone may block it and restrict access. I don't think that's happened to date, but it may be a concern in the future. And I know internally council colleagues who are dealing with the construction of the project are looking to see if they can actually help the bowling club with a solution which is out with this planning application. I know they've been looking at whether they can create a sort of junction at the end of that private road there, but I would come back to the initial point, Chair, that's not part of the consideration of the plan application. That dispute about whether they've got access rights or not is not an issue. The other thing I would just say as well is that looking at the layout of the scheme, you've got a situation where the topography slopes. You obviously know the area very well. It's quite a change in levels. The bowling club's at a much lower level than the houses at the front of Kirkhill Road, so that site drops down. So as you get towards the back of the application site, it does bank down quite steeply. So if you were to try and connect some sort of vehicle or access to it, you'd have to do quite a bit of engineering works just to try and create some sort of level to get down to it. So it's not just a case of drawing on a map and access. There are actual construction complications to it, and it's all to do with the levels, Chair.
Just to remind ourselves, what you're saying there is that the part that's the access, I take it between 58 and 60, that the council will continue to work, notwithstanding the planning application, to find a solution so we can get continued access to both the bowling club and Chair. The tennis courts. Is that what you were saying?
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, right. Okay.
No. Well, my understanding is that the access is via the playing field, because whoever sold the bowling green couldn't say that the access was on the private lane between 58 and 60 because they'd never owned it. So that the access, and what they have been using is the access has been via the playing fields. I've got a letter dated the 22nd of January sent to the bowling club solicitors saying, for the avoidance of doubt, we are not in any way challenging the bowling club's existing right of access. What we are saying is that the council's obligation to build the new access road contained in the 2007 disposition has prescribed. Now, the bowling club solicitors have a different view on that, but I don't think, and I'm happy to send this letter on to all members, for the avoidance of doubt, we are not in any way challenging the bowling club's existing right of access.
Chair, I don't have that before me, but I tend to think that is a dispute which I know is going through the council's legal services, and that's the place for it rather than through a planning application, Chair.
I was just going to say it'd be better to pursue that through the various channels within the council, and we can't actually pull that into the planning application. I was trying my best because I thought we might have been able to get that particular lane, get that in, you know, as part thereof for a solution, but it might be that we've got to go through that due process, Councillor McCall. I was trying to find an angle, but I don't think that one's going to jump up out at me at the moment, apart from Peter's reassurance that we will continue to see if we can find a solution so that the bowling club can actually get their equipment in there, and indeed anybody that's disabled can get in as well. But I mean, I think that's going to go through due process, yeah?
Yeah, Chair, and it's just, I suppose, just one more little bit of reassurance, if possible, is that in this case, the council own the land. It's not like you're talking about a third-party developer who may proceed in a particular direction. The council has obviously got its conscience and will do the right thing, hopefully. So.
Thank you, Chair. I suppose my difficulty is if the other option is to use that lane doesn't belong to the bowling club, and it does. So how do we then say to people who own a road, well, you just have to, we're going to do something about this, and there's nothing that you can do?
Yeah, it's just that's really a legal matter between the interested parties. It's not for the determination of a plan and application. So.
It's out with planning, although it's right and proper to raise a concern, but it will go through the process. And unfortunately, Mr. Tuppy's not with us today, so we can't get the details of that. But I'm sure he would advise you that it would be better dealt with out with the planning committee. I'll leave that sticking to you to think through just now, Councillor McCall. Councillor Hackett, you've been waving at me.
Thank you, Chair. It was through you, Chair. It was just to check with Councillor McCall what, if it's not a rejection of the application, are you proposing something different in terms of access to that property? And I'm wondering, picking up on there's sort of legal issues here, if Joe Bloggs on the street was looking at this and thought, well, that seems ridiculous that a landowner could, in effect, block off another person's access to their property. And it's trying to clarify in my own mind about, well, what is our responsibility then as a planning committee versus, well, that's just a matter between two private parties? Because it just doesn't sit right with me that we can make a decision that would effectively close off other property owners. But if what you're saying is, well, we're perfectly entitled to do that, it just seems odd.
Yeah, Chair, it just comes back to individual properties, whether it's a bowling green or an individual residential property. If it's got access by a particular route, that is safeguarded and protected by legal documents, and that's what secures it. If in developing a neighbouring site, the proposed scheme layout is acceptable in land use planning terms, then it's acceptable in land use planning terms. It has no overriding responsibility to meet someone else's off-site access arrangements. That should be safeguarded through other mechanisms, Chair. The other thing is, like I say, and it is raised for the solicitors, but my understanding is there is a dispute about that as well. So it's just simply not really for this committee to get into something which I don't think it should be getting into, based on something which I can't give you any certainty about.
Councillor Cassidy.
Yeah, I completely agree with Peter. We're getting into realms of legality here, which isn't our responsibility. This is between the bowling green and the people who own this strip of ground. But what I would say is if they've been using it for over 10 years, they've got a good shout at keeping it going.
Bad luck happened to know a little bit about the Scots law of prescription. If you've had 10 years of uninterrupted use, there is a case, but you have to be riding on the back of a conveyance that can be construed in your favour. And from everything I've heard today, there's just been an informal use of the landmark playing field. So the position is very much as Peter Arnsdorf indicated it. I've no doubt that most of us around this table, if not all of us, want to see the bowling green flourish, but in legal terms, I suspect what we will in another part of the council have to do is consider a concession, because at the moment they are in a landlocked position through perhaps no fault of their own, but certainly no fault of the council either.
Okay, right. Thanks for that. Everybody had their shot. Right, Let's formalise that. Somebody prepared to move the application? Well, I'll move it. Somebody second it? Councillor Wallace. Any amendments to that? Right, the application is approved. Right, item 6.1, which is a private for those...